I'm sure you've heard that statement or phrase from someone, take a walk in someone else's shoes. Have you ever considered that in your everyday life, or do you consider that? Can you imagine what a world would look like where everyone tried to understand another person's thoughts or feelings and perspectives? There's a new book out. It's called Empathy, Why It Matters and How to Get It. Talks about how empathy can really change the world in a positive way. And our author, Roman Krznarek, joins us. He's an international expert on empathy, founding member of the School of Life in London, also the founder of the world's first empathy museum. Roman, thank you for joining us today and spending time with us. Let's try that again. Okay, now I think I have you on. Roman, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me loud and clear?
I hear you loud and clear. Thank you so much for being with us today. And I really found your book quite fascinating. I learned a lot, not only about empathy, but a little about myself and how whether or not I'm empathizing the way maybe I could. And maybe as we start here, let's talk about define empathy as you see it for us.
Yeah, I think people get a bit confused about what empathy means. So if you open a psychology textbook, basically what it'll tell you is that empathy is the ability to step into somebody else's shoes and understand their feelings and their perspectives on the world. It's about really trying to understand, well, what is it like to be another person? So you're walking past a homeless guy in the street, and you really try and think about, well, what's it like to be walked past without someone looking you in the eye or to sleep out on a cold winter's night? That's what empathy is, and it's very different from what psychologists will call sympathy, which is having an emotional response to somebody, but you don't really share what they're going through. You don't try and see it through their eyes. It's just really pity or feeling sorry for somebody.
And this empathy has been something that you've carried with you and have been sort of working on and trying to understand for many years.
Well, in fact, I used to be a college professor, and I used to teach political science. And those were in the days when I thought the way you change a society is through elections and party politics and laws and things like that. And I still believe that to some extent. But what I've learned over the years is that you can change the world and society, our own lives, from the ground up through the way we treat others and step into their shoes. But actually, for me personally, my interest in empathy goes back to my childhood. I grew up in Australia, in Sydney, Australia, and when I was 10, my mother died of breast cancer. And like a lot of kids who have traumatic experiences, I lost my memories from before that age, but also I lost, in many ways, my empathy. I became very distanced from other people. I found it very difficult to cry or laugh or to really see things from other people's point of view. And I've gradually realized, it's taken me a long time to see this, that my interest in empathy has actually been, in some sense, an unconscious desire to recover that empathic self I'd lost as a kid.
And empathy can do, as you talk about in your book, can do a lot for us. I mean, heal broken relationships, as an example, but many other things as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think we've all been in situations where you're arguing with your partner or your husband or your wife, and you've just thought to yourself, oh, God, I wish they could just see things from my point of view. I wish they could understand where I'm coming from. But what are you asking for? Empathy, of course. You want them to step into your shoes, you know, if only for a moment. And that's really about the art of empathic listening, and we know it makes a difference. And empathic listening is really about two things. It's when you're in those tense situations with someone, if you want to practice this, you can focus on the other person's feelings and, secondly, also on their needs and give them a chance to express their feelings and their needs. And because ultimately, you know, people just want to feel listened to. And you can't always reach agreement with somebody, but if you listen to them in that empathic way, you can reduce the tension, and it really makes an enormous difference and shows how empathy can play a role, you know, in the kitchen, every day of your life.
And I think, as you point out, or as you mentioned in your book, brains, we're really designed to be empathetic, are we not?
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, the problem is, for the last 200 or 300 years, our culture has been telling us that human beings are the opposite of empathy, that we're essentially selfish, individualistic, self-centered creatures. But neuroscience research in the last 10 or 20 years has turned that whole idea on its head and told us that actually we've all got an empathy circuitry in our brains. Really, there's around 10 different sections. And if you get part of it injured, for example, your brain injured in a car accident, you might lose your ability to recognize fear or other emotions on someone else's face. You can lose your empathy. So it's kind of lodged there in our DNA and in our brain functioning. But the good news is that you can learn to get better at empathy as well. You know, as a child, you can be taught empathy as a school kid, and you can really bring that latent brain potential out into the real world.
Talking today with Roman Krznarek, who is an international expert on empathy. His new book is called Empathy, Why It Matters and How to Get It. And I'd love to hear from you. How often do you think about those, about empathy, about those around you and what they're going through? Is certainly there's a lot in the news today. There are many things going on today that would, I think, serve us all well if we could empathize with others. Have you tried empathizing? What experiences have you had? Give us a call. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. And, you know, to some extent, some of us have kind of switched off that empathetic brain, and you talk about switching it back on. Why aren't we able to switch that on so easily?
I think there's lots of reasons that stand as barriers to empathy. I mean, the simplest one is we live in a culture of distraction where we are rushing around nonstop, you know, rushing to get to meetings and meet deadlines and so on. And you can easily walk past someone in the street who needs help in some way, but you're too busy to even look them in the eye or to give them any attention. So that's obviously one factor. But of course, we all have assumptions and prejudices about others which prevent us empathizing with them, which switch off our empathic brains. I mean, and this is something I've always struggled with myself. I think we all have. I remember once, I live in the university town of Oxford in England, and there was this homeless guy I used to walk past for years, and I used to not take much notice of him. I used to think we'd have nothing in common. He was always walking around, picking up cigarette butts and muttering crazily to himself and walking around in no shoes in the snow. And one day I actually stopped to talk to him, and I discovered we had a lot in common. It turned out he had a philosophy degree from Oxford University, and we developed a friendship based on our mutual interest in philosophy and pepperoni pizza. But, you know, the point was that I'd had all these assumptions about the kind of person he was, and I was completely wrong about him. And I think that's often the case and a big barrier to switching on our empathic brains.
Yeah, I think you're right. As I was reading about that in your book, I thought of my own experiences. I was remembering there was a store that I would stop in every week to pick some things up, and the woman at the cash register was always seemed to be in a very foul mood.
Right.
And this is not really a pleasant person to deal with, and I thought of that, and that's kind of the, you know, I wasn't being very empathetic, I can tell you that. And I brought it up once with someone else in the store, and they said, well, her husband left her. She has a 25-year-old son who is in a wheelchair and really requires her total care, and she's holding down two jobs to try and live.
And right.
And at that point, I was so mad at myself.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we can blame ourselves, but of course it's difficult. And you know, it's hard to step into the shoes of every single person you walk past every day. But I think that, you know, probably once a week we can all try and have a conversation with a stranger and get beyond superficial talk and find out something of their lives. Because I think a lot of people are willing to share parts of their lives, not always the most intimate details. But I think those conversations with strangers are really important in opening us up so that, you know, we we maybe don't have so many assumptions about people, whether it's the person you know, that woman that you see in the shop or someone you buy a newspaper off every day.
Yeah, it certainly changed my relationship with her because I really changed my own attitude and my own and tried to make her day a little brighter every time I dealt with her. So Brenda in Southwest Wisconsin has a comment. Let's go there. Hi, Brenda. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment is that I don't have trouble empathizing with people. I have trouble over-empathizing with people to the degree that I will pick up other people's emotions, their physical pain. Sometimes it's almost like I'm living through other people's wounds, and I wondered if you had any comments or experience with that, that maybe you could help me.
Interesting. Thank you for calling, Brenda. Roman?
Yeah, absolutely. Brenda's point is a really important one, which is the problem of over-empathizing that some people have. Psychologists sometimes call it empathic over-arousal, where you see, the pain a child or a friend who's gone through, whose parents died or something like that, and you feel so much of it yourself, it's almost like it infects you in some way and can be quite debilitating. I think what a lot of the experts in the field say is that what you've got to do in those situations is almost fit your own oxygen mask before you fit anybody else's. You have to know where your own limits are and sometimes step away from situations that might sometimes overwhelm you. So anyone, for example, who works on a suicide call line faces the potential of that over-empathizing, that empathy overwhelming them. But, of course, those people don't take call after call. They step away, they get debriefed, they have breaks. And I think we need to find ways of doing that in our everyday lives. I think what's equally interesting is that people who have this very high levels of empathic attunement, like Brenda, tend to be people who are very helping. They tend to take more action on behalf of others. So even if they feel quite overwhelmed, it doesn't necessarily paralyze them. But it is certainly an issue, and learning to sort of know your own, where your own limits are, can help.
Yeah. Thank you, Brenda, for calling. Appreciate it. And Derek in Pulaski, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hey, guys. Kind of going off of what the last caller had to say, it seems to me that a lot of us, with just our day-to-day lives, with everything we have going on and all the stimuli and all the things we have to think about, that there's just not enough practical time for us to invest in recognizing these sympathetic emotions and being able to do anything about it. And I think not having enough time, and then the negative feelings maybe that we have for ourselves for not being able to attend to these emotions, just leads us to kind of push them away to the back of our minds.
Oh, thank you very much for calling. A comment, Roman?
Yeah, so it's a good thought there from Derek. I think what's interesting there is that, I mean, people often see the idea of empathizing as a burden, something that does take up time or extra energy. It's a distraction from other things. And what I think is really important to remember is that empathy isn't just something about making you good and expanding your moral universe, but it's something that's good for you too. It's worth investing time in empathy. So just to give you an example, I mean, I've got children I've got 7-year-old twins, and I've found as they've grown up that actually putting the time into trying to see things from their perspective and understand what they're going through really helps our relationship, and in fact makes it much easier to manage being a parent.
You know what? I'm going to break in right there, Roman, because we need to take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back. And hold that thought. We'll be back with our guests. Stay with us. It's not always easy to connect with the world around you, especially with the technology you and I have access to. Sometimes it can stand in the way of talking to the person right next to you. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today we're talking about how you can begin to connect with others in a more meaningful way through empathy. Our guest, Roman Krznarek, is the author of the new book, Empathy, Why It Matters and How to Get It. He's a founding member of the School of Life in London, founder of the world's first empathy museum, joins us from London. And glad to have you join us today, Roman. Thank you so much.
Glad to be here, Larry.
You were talking about your 7-year-old twins.
I was. And what I was going to say about them was that that actually trying to empathize with them has really helped me as a parent. And I remember one day when my son was about 4, and I'd just been cleaning the kitchen floor a bit earlier, and then I walked in on him, and he had all these cups and jars out and was pouring orange juice and apple juice from one jar into another and making a complete mess everywhere, and I was about to completely lose my temper at him. And then I stopped for a moment, and I tried to do a bit of empathy, put into practice what I preach, and I asked him, I said, well, what are you doing? And he said, well, Dad, I'm doing a science experiment, and, you know, the juice goes up higher in a thin glass. Now, I thought that was amazing that he said that, because suddenly I realized he wasn't trying to make a mess on purpose and make my life a misery. He was actually trying to be a... He was turning the kitchen to a miniature scientific lab, and I thought that was a wonderful thing, and it changed my attitude. And I think that's the kind of thing that means empathy isn't just a nice added extra. It's actually part of building relationships and understanding others.
Very, very good, great story. John in Holton has a comment. Let's go there. John, hello.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to comment about how important it is to create relationships between people. Because just like the example just now, or the example that Larry gave before, about knowing a little section of a person's life lets you open that sort of, or switch on that empathy switch in your brain. And it's very difficult to create relationship or know another person in society right now, or just in this like very rushed sort of culture. And I also wanted to echo the thing that was said at the very beginning of the program about how politics aren't changing things, aren't changing the world the way that empathy could, or I want to speak to the power of empathy, because that our laws don't necessarily change our relationships, but our relationships can change laws, or our power to have empathy with another, or I can change our ways that we approach law, or and stuff like that. It's so nervous to be on the radio.
Oh, well, I think you've raised an interesting point. Roman, a comment?
Yeah, I think the political angle is really fascinating, because I think empathy and changing relationships can change laws. Just think, in the United States, in the early 20th century, 1 in 6 children were working as basically illegal child or child laborers. They were working in textile mills, glass factories, cotton fields, and the National Child Labor Committee, you know, a nonprofit, launched a campaign, an empathy campaign, to try and tackle child labor. And they hired the famous social documentary photographer Lewis Hine to go and photograph children in these factories. And his photographic exhibitions in public exhibits and newspapers shocked the nation into empathy, because people could suddenly see that there are 4- and 5-year-olds standing next to 12-foot-big, tall, you know, cotton manufacturing machines. And it led to a mass empathic outpouring and some of the first legislation at the state level, later the federal level, for to stop child labor. And I think it's a great example where, in that case, photography was a powerful force for creating legal changes, showing that empathy can really make a difference.
Mm. John, thank you. I really appreciate your call. And as you're listening, I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments or experiences. How do you think, have you tried to empathize with others? What's your experience been? One way or the other, maybe you have a comment on that. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And an email comment from Sydney in Appleton, who's I'm an avid believer that empathy is a core capability to living a healthy and happy life. Growing up, I'd cry if the weather changed, and I was just so sensitive to other people's feelings. I always thought something was wrong with me until I learned of the word empathy, and now I kind of embrace my own empathy and allow that to guide me through life. I feel I have a better sense and understanding of people compared perhaps to others, and I'm forever grateful that I was blessed with a strong sense of empathy.
Yes, it's interesting that Sydney is bringing up that connection, in a way, between empathy and well-being or happiness, in a sense, because the happy life, as psychologists are telling us, could come potentially in two different ways. One is from being what psychologists call being extrinsically motivated, which means being interested in things that are where people judge you from the outside for your wealth, for your social status, you know, having a fancy job or a great car and so on. But the other thing psychologists talk about, as opposed to extrinsic values, is being motivated by intrinsic values. That's where your happiness or well-being comes from, connecting with other people, not feeling alone, having good family relationships and community relationships. And what the research shows is people who focus on intrinsic values have higher levels of happiness. And of course, empathy is that glue which holds together those intrinsic relationships, which is about building communities. You know, one in four people in the United States say they feel chronically lonely. Well, it's obvious to me then that empathy is a good thing because it helps you develop relationships with others. It stops us feeling so isolated.
And I was thinking of some of the examples you use in your book. Oscar Schindler came to mind as an example of, not quite exactly along the lines of what you were just talking about, but someone who, I mean, he wasn't that nice of a guy to begin with.
Absolutely, that's right. I mean, Oscar Schindler, you know, out of which came the Spielberg film, you know, Schindler's List, I think, which is one of the great kind of Holocaust films of all time. You know, he didn't start life as a particularly nice fellow. He was an accomplice of the Nazis and made money out of having Jewish workers brought to his factories by the SS. But actually, what was interesting about him, I thought, is that he made a friend with an individual, which was a Jewish accountant named Itzhak Stern, played by Ben Kingsley in the film, if anybody remembers.
Yeah.
But that then connected him through that individual to all the Jewish workers in his family, in his factory, and it made him see their individuality in the same way that I guess you got to see the individuality of the woman in the shop that you were talking about a bit earlier. And I think that's really important because it shows that empathy, even empathizing with one person, can be a stepping stone to opening our minds. I recently had a Syrian refugee in my home, a young man, and it really opened my eyes because I actually started talking to him about his experiences of coming to England, but it turned out he was an expert in 19th century American literature. That's what he studied at the University of Damascus. And we talked about Thoreau and Emerson and things like that, and suddenly I saw Syrian refugees in a totally different light. You know, it's a really humanizing experience and very important.
Absolutely. You can join in, too, by the way, 1-800-642-1234. So conversation really is crucial to empathy.
Absolutely. Conversation's at the heart of empathizing. I mean, since we're sitting here talking on the radio, it makes me think of the great Chicago radio host Studs Terkel,
yeah,
who, you know, famously interviewed over 7,000 people. And what he said was the key to good conversation was curiosity. He said, in a way, it's about considering that the other person is probably more interesting than you are, you know, and it gets you to step out of yourself and discover another person, which can, you know, not only extend empathy but create new friendships. And so I think we need to practice the art of conversation. And I've been running this new empathy museum project, and one of the things we've been doing are what are called human libraries. And what a human library is a library, but it, with a difference. Instead of borrowing a book, you borrow a person for conversation. So you go along to one of these events, and you might borrow a young Muslim teenager or a Pentecostal pacifist or an unhappy Wall Street banker or whoever, and you can talk with them, have conversations, and it's about getting over assumptions and prejudices and stereotypes. And I think if human libraries spread around the world, I think the world would probably be a slightly better place.
Talk a little bit more about your museum and what's the genesis of that.
Yeah, the museum is based on the idea that, of course, it's great to read about empathy in a book, but also experiencing it is really important. And when we launched the museum in London a couple of months ago, it's a traveling exhibit which is going around the world, we started with something unusual, which was that if you walked along the River Thames in London, you would have seen a gigantic shoebox. And the shoebox said on the side, "A Mile in My Shoes," the name of our first exhibit. And it was so big that you could walk inside it, and it was an empathy shoe shop. And you would have gone in, Larry, and someone would have measured your foot, measured your shoe size, and then fitted you with the shoes of someone from a different walk of life. It could have been a guy who's been in prison for 14 years, or an underground sewage worker, or the child of a Kosovan refugee. And you literally then go out and walk a mile in their shoes while listening to an audio narrative of them telling their story, talking about their own life. So it takes that old proverb we all know, never criticize a man until you've walked a mile in his shoes or his moccasins, and actually made it real. And it's a very powerful experience.
It sounds like a really wonderful experience. You're bringing
it's fun as well, especially when you try and wear the size 12 stilettos of a bearded drag queen. I wasn't too good at that.
Randy in Minnesota, it's your turn. Hi, Randy.
Hey, how you doing today?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Good. Well, I just wanted to say that as far as like the empathy thing goes, I was always been kind of a loner. I've never really felt real comfortable around big crowds of people. I mean, to this day, I mean, I'm 58 years old now. To this day, I only have maybe 4 friends in my whole life, and that's it. I was raised in the 1960s, and I was raised by my mom and dad, but my dad always taught me that if you see another person on the side of the road and they're a bum or whatever, that's none of your business. Just mind your own business. And that's just the way I was raised. I'm a truck driver to this day, and I mean, my company has asked me about training. And I go, I really don't want to be that close to another person in the truck.
Oh, so, well, Roman, comment?
Yep. Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think there are people out there like Randy who are loners, who are maybe introverts or other things that, you know, not everybody likes to be in a big throng of people all the time. But what I found really interesting about Randy said is that Randy was talking about how he's really only got 4 or 5 good friends. And what's interesting to me is that some of the most empathic people are actually people who don't necessarily aren't great big extroverts who love being in parties and big crowds, but actually have quite a small circle of people, but they really give to them a lot, and they'll do. I mean, my hunch might be wrong about this, but my hunch is that Randy will probably do anything for his friends, and his friends will do anything for Randy. And I think that's really important. And then my father is a little bit like that as well. And of course, the way we act in the world is so much shaped by our childhoods, how we were brought up, as Randy talking about the values that he was brought up with. And that's partly why I think also it's interesting to consider, well, why don't we, if you want to spread empathy, why not teach empathy in schools? And there's a great program that began in Canada called The Roots of Empathy, where what they do is they bring a baby into the classroom. This is true, by the way. A live baby comes into a classroom of elementary school kids, and the kids start talking about the baby that's sitting in the floor in the middle. You know, why is she crying? Why is she laughing? What's she thinking or feeling? And they use that as a jumping-off point to try and think about, well, what's it like not just to be a baby, but to be a kid in a wheelchair or, you know, somebody who's, you know, who's blind or something like that. And so we can start nurturing that empathy in children, and in some ways that it might be something that balances something in us to also be a loner or want to look after ourselves.
Mm. And Randy, thank you again for calling. I want to give Mike in Kenosha a chance to join in. Mike, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, thanks for having me on. Kind of going back to what your guest mentioned about walking a mile in somebody else's shoes, I don't think I really developed empathy until I became an adult, until I started going through some of these experiences. I knew how to fake it. I knew how to express sympathy towards somebody else, but I didn't really feel it inside. And I find it amazing some of these people who, as young people, young adults, actually feel this sense of empathy, you know, even maybe without having gone through those experiences. You know, for instance, you know, living alone for a while, or going through a divorce, or having a loved one pass away. You know, I didn't experience those things until I became an older adult, and now I look at other people throughout the years who've experienced those things before me, and I can really, I guess, I feel a sense of sadness or more understanding towards them.
Hmm. Roman, comment?
Yeah, I think what's important there is that, you know, although we can teach empathy to kids, you can also develop it as an adult. It's not too late if you haven't been on a Roots of Empathy program or something when you're in elementary school, because, as Mike's saying, we go through experiences which transform us. Which you couldn't, you know, you can't necessarily imagine what it is like to go through a divorce or to have a loved one pass away. But once it's happened to you, it changes you, right? You
right.
treat people differently based on those experiences. Problem is, of course, we can't always experience very extreme things, like what's it like to be a child soldier in Sudan or something like that. Sometimes the gap sometimes feels a little bit too big. But I think that, you know, human beings share so much emotionally in terms of how they feel about love and hate and ambition and things. It is possible to make connections. The other, I think, interesting thing that Mike said is about the thing about faking it. I think people can fake empathy. You know, a lot of young doctors, medical students, are taught empathy in quite a mechanical and instrumental way. Like you go to the doctor and a young doctor will come up to you and say, you know, so, you know, you must be feeling really bad right now or something. You think, well, you don't really understand what I'm going through, right? And it can be a little bit too mechanical, and I think we need to watch out for that.
And, Mike, thank you. And let's turn to another Mike, this one in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about putting a face on someone and that causing empathy and how that can also lead to larger social change. I think that the AIDS epidemic certainly put a face on gay America. And once that happened, we experienced social change in our country at an accelerated rate, something that we would never have expected to see. And it has culminated in such things as gay marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely right, that so much social struggle has come out of starting to see people as individuals, to be able to look them in the eye, to see the face, to picture somebody who's, whether they're Native Americans or they're a gay man or whatever it happens to be. And that starts changing us. And I'm very inspired by social and political movements which try to create this individuality, seeing the faces and voices of people on a mass scale. And I'm inspired by an organization in Israel and Palestine called the Parents Circle, which brings together Israelis and Palestinians who've all had family members killed in the conflict to talk about and share their stories, very important for building empathy. But also they've done wonderful programs, like one called the Hello Peace Telephone Line, where there was a free phone telephone line up around the country. Any Israeli could call this free phone number, and they were put through to talk to a Palestinian stranger for up to half an hour, could talk about anything. Any Palestinian could call the number, and they're put through to an Israeli. And in its first 5 years of operation, over 1 million calls were made on that Hello Peace phone line. Now, it wasn't seeing somebody in the face, looking them in the eyes, but it was hearing their voice, and that, too, can catapult our empathic imaginations.
Absolutely. We have Lisa in Amberg up next with a question here. Oops. Not getting her on right at the moment. For some reason, we're having a little trouble with our phone lines. Let's try once more. No? Oh, it's too bad. I can't get her on because she had a question about how to connect with people. And you certainly talk about that in your book.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one of the things about connecting is it goes back to this idea of empathic listening. And one of the best ways to connect is to ask people what they're going through. What are your feelings and what are your needs? Giving them a chance to express those things. And what's really interesting is that in labor disputes between employers and employees, if both sides agree before they start speaking to literally repeat what the other side said before they start talking themselves, you reach conflict resolution 50% faster. And what that tells us is that in the process of trying to create relationships with people, being able to listen out for what they're thinking, let them know that you understand them, really makes a huge difference to making our relationships work, whether it is in the workplace or at home or even in the community or political arena.
You give 6 techniques that can help people gain greater insights into their others' thoughts and feelings and worldviews, and I thought those were, and we don't have time to talk about all of them now, but I thought they were really a valuable part of your book.
Yeah, I think one of the 6 habits of highly empathic people I wrote about, which we haven't talked about, which is I call traveling in your armchair, which is about doing empathy a slightly easier way, which is through reading books and watching films which transport us and help us understand other lives. I mean, you know, open a book like To Kill a Mockingbird. Well, what's the central line of that book? The central line is, you never really understand another person until you step inside of his skin and walk around in it for a while. And I think we all know that reading novels, watching great films can transport us out of our own living rooms in a way which isn't necessarily too difficult to do on a Friday night when you're tired after work, but it can still actually change us.
Well, I hope the book's been... How's the book doing? I hope it's been selling well.
Oh, yeah, it's all around the world. In the United States, it's just come out in Korea and Croatia. So let's hope it can bring a bit of harmony to those places, too.
Well, and Roman, I hope we have a chance to talk again. I really enjoyed visiting with you, and it'd be fun to go, because we just scratched the surface on your book. So thank you so much.
Well, thanks to you, and thanks to all the callers, to Brenda and Derek and Mike and Lisa and John and whoever else I've forgotten. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Roman. Roman Krznarek, and we have a link on our Facebook page, so you'll get a look at the book. It's called Empathy, Why It Matters and How to Get It, and more information on our Facebook page. Just go to The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page. I really enjoyed talking with him, and I really enjoyed the book as well. Empathy, Why It Matters and How to Get It. Tomorrow at 11, we'll find out about the annual Christmas bird count and get some new ideas for wildlife-related gifts for the holiday season as we talk with our wildlife experts. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Wisconsin life is fun.
First started out on a Wednesday night. A group of ladies getting together playing cards.
I got no stress. I said, quit! Quit!
It involves food, fellowship, and plan bid with.
Wisconsin Life. The people and places that sound like home. Mondays and Wednesdays during Central Time and online all the time at wisconsinlife.org.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Kimberly-Clark Corporation, home of Kleenex, Scott, and Huggies brands. More information about Kimberly-Clark's 143-year history is available on the web at kimberly-clark.com. Support also comes from the Christine Center, committed to retreat programs for wellness, meditation, and spiritual growth in a natural woodland sanctuary in central Wisconsin. More information is at Christine.